Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, March 15th, year of our Lord, 2014. A space odyssey. No,
that was the past. I think we're already past all the space odysseys.
Yeah, it is a space odyssey. Did you hear about Moby Dick? No, seriously.
What about him?
Last week, Moby Dick, I don't remember the official designation of the asteroid.
Oh.
But there was a small asteroid.
Is it?
Which would amount to one heck of a big meteor, but a small asteroid that was supposed to pass by the Earth early last week at about 3.5 million miles, which sounds like a long ways, but it really isn't.
Really.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those near-Earth objects that has been very carefully plotted and examined. And
by Ishmael.
Right.
Watching.
Right. Yeah, well, you know Ishmael. I mean, we know him. And so all the telescopes turned to get their obligatory near-Earth pass pictures of this asteroid, which had a very complicated series of numbers and letters that was its name. And it wasn't there.
We must hunt.
We have lost.
Was it an albino?
They don't know. It may have a low albino condition. We don't know. The fact is that it was spotted by one of the infrared satellites sometime back, and we have these infrared satellites we put up that look out into space and see the slight temperature difference between a near-Earth asteroid and the background of space. In many cases, you can't see them with a telescope. They're a bit too far away, and they don't, you know, they're just not in a position where they're reflecting a lot of light. And this was one that had been tracked several times, so we knew we had a pretty good handle on where it was going and what it was supposed to do and everything else. And it's big enough that if it were to smack into the Earth, it would have a significant effect. It wouldn't end civilization. I don't remember
the exact
size.
Depends on the civilization,
I think.
You
know, it's a few tons, like maybe 40 tons or something like that. But, you know, which is not really that huge of an asteroid. It's a very small asteroid. But it's a lot bigger than that one that hit, that
in Russia.
Went off over Russia. It probably would make it to the ground, unlike the one in Russia that burned up in space, depending on what angle it hit at. But the problem is, we don't know if it's going to hit or what angle or when, because
We lost it.
We lost track of it. So they've named it Moby Dick because it's been seen several times. It's been reported.
I think
it's
I'd
a
call
near
it
Earth
Elvis.
Object.
Call it Elvis.
Well, and now
we have an Elvis sighting.
No, this is a lot bigger than Elvis. It's more like a whale.
If you look at the exponential rate of increase of his weight and then plot that on a timeline, if he was out in space during this time period and continued to grow at the same rate, he might be.
Well, now, I think the problem is that he would have to be breathing and eating to grow that way.
Oh, that's true. You just completely destroyed my theory, and it was such a good one.
It was. Now, if you did that and you left him on Earth, he would eventually consume all of the resources of the planet.
That's true. And if you part of our issues, those of you that think that we've completely lost your mind, first, you're right.
We've lost your mind? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for listening. I know it means so much to you. Wait a minute. Okay. Those of you that think that we've completely lost our mind, if you take statistics in any
I don't
track,
know where that random statement came from. Anyway, go ahead.
If you take any statistic and you plot it as if it's going to go on forever, it's generally going to be wrong.
Right.
If you look at a baby and you look at the growth curve of
I have looked at babies.
You have looked at a human baby.
Yes.
A human baby doubles in size in about the first 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
If you plot that on and it continues to double in size every 6 months, before very long,
It'll be as big as you are.
Planet. The baby would be the planet. So we have to look at this predictive statistic and say that we must stop all babies from eating or they will all be planets.
Sounds like a winner to me.
And that sounds like it came out of left field, except that is often the way statistics are quoted by the media about things, and they act like it makes total sense, and if the economy keeps doing fill in the blank and this fill in the blank, then some horrible thing, fill in the blank, will happen. And generally speaking, we have to step back and go, yeah, you might have a little problem there. Your math was all right, but the assumptions at the beginning were all wrong.
You are, by the way, listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number's in here if today is Saturday, March 15th. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
There was an article in Financial Times of London today.
I bet there was more than one.
And in which I could see the future because the article is published. Wait a minute, is it the future or the past?
Oh, I don't know.
See, because it's like later there than it is here, so I'm looking into the future. Yeah,
right.
Okay, because it's
right.
Like if I access the Financial Times, it's 5 hours in the future.
But it's already happened there.
Right.
So it's the past there, but it's the future here.
Yes.
Right.
Anyway, the article is, in a tech bubble with a twist, the big danger is bonds. And a guy named Seth Klarman, who manages about $2.7 billion in the Baupost hedge fund, which sounds like a big hedge fund, but that is actually $2.7 billion. That's a pretty fair amount of money, although there are individuals who are worth more than that. Anyway, in his quarterly investment letter, he declared that there is a capital markets are in a bubble. But the bubble is not in stocks. The bubble is in bonds. And what he is forecasting, which I cannot disagree with. I don't know if his assessment is correct completely. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think there's a distinct possibility. You want something to be afraid of.
Here we go.
And people love to have something to be afraid of. That's why they ride on roller coasters
and
watch
horror
movies. Right?
We're talking about war and bubbles here.
Right. War, pestilence. We could go over to taxes for a little while.
Right.
Death and taxes. But he said that it's not, we've seen historically what happens when interest rates rise, and he says they're going to, and I certainly can't argue with that because all the Federal Reserve Board members who spoke all agree that they're going to be reducing quantitative analysis and
easing.
Easing.
Yes, not analysis. They will keep
analyzing.
Yeah,
not the analysis. The quantitative stimulus. And I just lost the name of the guy who's the new deputy chair of the Fed. Fisher.
Fisher, yes. Jacob.
He appeared before the Senate on his confirmation hearings. And they asked him when the Fed was going to start tightening and his opinion, and he said it already has, which shocked everybody. He said as they remove QE, quantitative easing, out of the system, it's effectively tightening. What this guy said, and caller on 773-1400, we'll get to you in just a second. No, you're there. What the guy said in his newsletter, and it makes phenomenal sense, is we know that when interest rates rise, bond markets fall, and it's very predictable how a bond declines in value as interest rates rise. What he said that economists are not taking into account, generally, is that a lot of people have their money in bonds, and a lot of corporations have their money in bonds. They still have them in bonds out of fear of some disaster like an invasion of Crimea or something. Once interest rates start to rise, he said, and those bond markets fall to some point, there is the real danger of a panic in the bond market. And he said a panic in the bond market is possible because there is just so much money in bonds as a percentage of everything else going on out there and derivatives. You got the one to worry about something? That's something to worry about. Anyway, 773-1400, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
I just had a question about buying gold. If you could give me some ideas as to what you would use in order to make sure that you got a good purchase and where you would purchase. Those kind of ideas.
Okay. Jewelry stores are really a good place to buy gold.
And
then wear it around your neck.
And
but as far as buying gold bars or so on,
mm-hmm.
don't.
Don't, okay.
Let me explain why. It's two things. One, if you take possession of the gold, you've got an instant loss in value. You've got a whole series of things that come up, including the fact that if somebody knows you have possession of the gold, they can relieve you of it.
Yes.
Normally when people buy gold, they don't take possession. They leave it in the possession of the gold dealers, who are virtually unregulated.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been strong suggestions from time to time that gold dealers sell considerably more gold than they actually own. And nobody is able to check that.
Uh-huh.
Buying gold is a bad idea because it's an unregulated market and you're dealing with people you don't know. If you're buying gold just to buy gold. The other thing is, there's a fundamental rule in investing and in economics. If you invest in something that produces no utility, you have a high probability of losing money. Gold produces no utility for anyone. If you put money in the bank, an FDIC-insured account, the bank will loan about 80 to 85, maybe 90% of that money out to other people who will do things like buy cars and start businesses and build houses. And that gives people jobs and increases utility in the economy. If you buy into a mutual fund, say you buy mutual fund shares, and they spread that money out across a whole bunch of companies, that gives working capital to corporations wherever they invest that enables those corporations to buy things and do things. Those are all what we call utility production. And that means that if you consistently do that over a long period of time and you're widely diversified, or in the bank, if you just put it in the bank, you'll probably be better off in the future than you are today. However, gold's an interesting aspect because the longer you own gold, the more likely you are to lose money. Whereas if you had, let's say, a broadly diversified mutual fund that was trying to be all things to all people, and there's a number of them,
mm-hmm.
The longer you own it, the more likely you are to make money. And it's kind of like going to Las Vegas or going to a casino. The longer you play, the more you're likely to lose because the odds are against you. Now, you may make a lot of money in the short term. You may lose a lot of money in the short term, and people are hoping on that first one. But the longer you play, the more likely you are to lose, and the larger your losses tend to become. Gold is that way, too. It's sort of a morality issue. I know there are people who have bought gold and made money. I know a lot more people who have bought gold and lost a lot of money, and it's just not a good idea generally. If you're concerned about value and you want to protect yourself, that's why God and Franklin D. Roosevelt put the FDIC on banks.
Now, there is a bunch of information you can get if you go to the Federal Trade Commission's website, and they can tell you more about how to do it safely. But they're really, the biggest thing that they talk about is warning people to beware when going to gold buying businesses. There's a place called Goldline. Goldline was a major, still kind of exists. It's under indictment for fraud, and the people involved are, the court cases are going to be interesting, to be sure. They've agreed to refund many millions of dollars to customers. And the executives have been charged with fraud and defrauding customers and so on. Because what they would do, and this is one that made the news media last year and the year before, because Glenn Beck was a large sponsor of theirs and was paid directly to say some things that may or may not have been true. Basically, he would entice people to go and buy gold, and the concept was that gold will always hold its value. The problem with that is that gold is not holding its value. It has dropped, and there's no point in history where it did hold its value. Even when it was fixed artificially by the U.S. government, and we don't do that anymore. So gold is a lot more dangerous than it used to be by far, and it was never really safe.
And it's the markups and markdowns on it are so great that the bets, you're going all wrong in the bets there. And it's just a matter of...
People tend to get upset
let me ask you
when
a question.
We say that, though.
Why would you want to buy gold?
I was just curious as to how it worked, how the process worked.
Expensively.
And you've explained it to me. Yes, you have. Okay. And I appreciate it.
And let me, there's another key point here. And that is any time that you deal with a stranger at a distance. And sometimes when you deal with strangers up close. But anytime you deal financially with a stranger at a distance. And this is, by the way, a pretty esoteric little piece of a paper that I'm writing right now. You need a governmental intermediary. For instance, when you buy meat at the supermarket, presuming you're not a vegetarian, you assume that the FDA, the FDA has, because a little FDA stamp even on a lot of little packages. But the point is, we don't know where that cow lived or if it was sick or healthy. We don't know about the conditions under which it was butchered. We don't know the conditions under which it was packed. We don't know any of that stuff because we don't know the farmer. We don't know the butcher. We did, historically, as a society many years ago.
People used to go, right. I'm not going to the butcher on 6th Street because his meat sits there and rots for a little bit.
And so we need a government. That's what one of the reasons that we have government is to perform an intermediary safety and security action. So when you invest your money or when you buy something that is supposedly for investment or for safety, the first question I tell people to ask is what federal governmental agency backs or assures this purchase?
The quality of the purchase, the truth of the purchase,
right.
All of that.
And if you say, well, the federal government doesn't have anything to do with it, but there's a state regulator someplace that may or may not be looking at it,
we get a little uncomfortable there.
Then run, don't walk in the other direction.
Yeah, and we have to be clear here. Government has a role in our lives. We want it to be there. We don't want it to take a larger role than it needs to take. That's where we, in America, we can debate on that all day long. The role of the government should be, for instance, a police officer preventing crime. Well, we just have to define what crime that they should prevent. If the crime is spitting on the sidewalk and you get 3 years in prison for it, there's a problem. We can debate about that. But the role of having a police officer in a city is not debatable. When we talk about a purchase of something, particularly things that have large monetary value, you want to make sure that you have recourse under the law, easy recourse, not that you have to take a 5-year lawsuit to get your money back if there was a fraud involved, but that you go to a known governmental organization, give them a complaint, and you get speedy results.
Right. And let me give you a couple of examples. If you have money in the bank and the bank fails, your local bank, do you lose any money?
No.
And why? Because the federal government says you won't. If you and the same thing is true if you purchase, let's just say you purchase shares in a mutual fund. There's a law on the books called the Investment Company Act of 1940. And by the way, it's a really good idea to make sure your fund is covered under that act.
Yeah.
If your fund is covered under that act, then everything that has anything to do with the fund can fail. And the United States government says your shares in that fund can't be touched by anybody's creditors.
Now, the market can still fall.
Yeah, market.
That's part of the deal of investing in the market. But the manager of that fund can't take your money.
Right. And, you know, people don't realize that a lot of times. So they go like somebody to like Madoff, who wasn't managing mutual fund. It was a privately managed account.
If he had been, then it would have been checked by the regulators. People say, why didn't the regulators check it? Well, because he was saying that he wasn't doing it in a way that the regulators needed to check.
He basically said, I'm outside of regulation here. And he admitted it to people. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know the difference. And then if you, let's say you have bonds. And you have them in a brokerage account at some national brokerage firm. If you ever get a statement from them, you'll say it somewhere on there, insured by the SIPC up to $500,000. Now, does that mean the price on the market won't go up and down? It certainly can happen. If what you had in the account happened to be, for instance, municipal bonds from Detroit,
that's probably not worth anything.
But as far as it being a fraud, and you gave money to a company to buy stocks and they put them in your account, but they really weren't there,
then you can recover the money.
Then the SIPC will recover the shares for you. So You know, there's a role, like Jake said, there's a role for government, and I think we sometimes get too comfortable with the fact that the government does...
invisibly does, in many cases.
Since the Great Depression, right, has protected us against a lot of major frauds. So when somebody comes along and said, I've got something better than a mutual fund, or here, buy some gold, and you see a lot of advertisements for it, we kind of assume there must be some government agency that's overseeing these guys to make sure they're not ripping us off.
There isn't.
And the fact is, there's not. Commodities are almost unregulated.
There was a great movie that was done by some cast members from Saturday Night Live years back called Trading Places. Mm-hmm. It was Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, and it was about cornering the... frozen concentrate orange juice market. The only part that was illegal in there was the fact that they had information that wasn't available to the public, and that was only slightly illegal.
Right.
Everything that took place in that movie, commodities, and gold is a commodity, you're allowed to buy all the gold available. There's nobody out there that says that's mm-hmm. monopoly. You can't do that. No, you're allowed to go. If you have enough money,
right.
you figure it out, you do it right, you can corner the commodity market. You can buy all of the bacon, all of the pork belly, and then what? Well, the government says, well, now you have a lot of bacon.
And gold, interestingly enough, because of the exclusion given to commodities under the law against being regulated by our Congress, a person can get on the radio or television and say gold always holds its value.
Or they can say, in the next 5 years, gold is going to reach $92 trillion.
And it would be blatantly illegal for them to say that about a stock or a bond or any kind of security that's traded on the market. But they can say it about commodities. And people, you know, we're not taught in school the difference between securities and commodities. You know,
yeah. Who would think?
I mean, nobody. You know, if I ask 1,000 people on the street, I would venture to say comfortably, 998 of them would not know the difference between securities and commodities. And yet, the regulation and the care with which they have to be advertised, there's a universe of difference between them. So, I hope that answers some of your questions.
Yes, sir. Jeff, y'all are awesome guys. I really appreciate your program. Thank you so much for taking your time to do it.
We apologize. We apologize for
good ideas.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being so complimentary. Sometimes I wonder about us, but we need a little reassurance every once in a while.
I often
wonder. Keep going down the road you're going.
I keep seeing all these wrong way signs.
Yes, it's the protest signs that bother me. Have you?
Don't believe them.
Caller, have you seen the protest signs on the roads? End construction.
End road work.
You know, every time that you see someplace where, you know, construction, and then at the end of it, there's that protest sign that says end construction.
And there's these signs that you're driving along and people blatantly disobey them. They say do not pass, and people just drive right by them. It's just,
exactly.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if you see a do not pass sign, obviously you're supposed to stop right there.
I just don't
get it. Okay. Thanks for calling. Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
I know we're not funny.
Yeah, no, not funny at all.
We've been told we're not funny. We're just weird. There is a difference between funny and weird.
Is it funny, ha-ha, or funny, I'm laughing so that they don't do anything more strange?
That's very funny. Anyway, telephone numbers. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we really do need to play some commercials so that KTEM and Town Square can pay the electric bills and stuff like that. So we'll be back on the other side of these important words from Town Square Media and KTEM. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and Jake McClure. 773-1400 if you're in Eastville County.
Otherwise, it's 1-866-597-1400. That's anywhere else within the sound of our voices. There, I said it.
Good.
Do you feel good about that?
Well, actually, you didn't say your voice. You said our voices, which is speaking collectively.
That's usually what I say. You like to, you tell me how much you like me to say it, but you usually say it before so that it's repetitive if I say it again. Just maybe redundant as well.
Redundantly repetitive,
yes.
All over again?
Yes, one more time.
Right. Hey, a couple of interesting papers. I enjoy reading academic papers.
Actual papers, or you read them electronically?
Well, they're called papers.
Even though they are not.
They're digital papers.
I have actually, I do a lot of academic paper reading, and I have yet to hold the actual paper.
I've got.
It's pretty amazing.
No, I've actually got a stack of paper that I've used.
You printed out for that? Just
yeah,
so you
I did.
Can
well, it was
paper.
Actually printed out back when in
went
the dark ages.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Back.
And I still use
20 minutes ago before.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. In one of them, we've talked about the fact that there have been three experimental methods of dealing with a severe recession, a financial meltdown.
Yes.
In the world.
That has
The Europeans have tried austerity.
Oust?
Austerity.
You're pronouncing that with the
austerity,
but
it's still it's Eastern austerity, obviously.
Yes.
Okay, which is very similar to Austria.
So yeah, Austria. Austerity.
And interesting enough, the Austrian
or East. They're Eastern.
I called it austerity because austerity. The Austrian, which is the Osterreich, which is the Eastern reign.
Right.
The Austrian school of economics says that in a downturn. You should probably cut the budget.
Right.
We tried that in the Great Depression.
It
didn't work. But anyway, they did that.
It went from depression to Great Depression.
Right, and that's pretty close to what's happened in the southern half of Europe. 30% unemployment is not unusual down there. They're pretty miserable.
They are in a depression.
Yes, and so they tried that. The same thing we tried in the Great Depression in the 1930s.
We said, let's not do that again.
We took kind of a middle ground. And kind of went half measures.
We said we'll do a stimulus and some budget cuts.
We did a little bit of stimulus, and we did some budget cuts, and we did quantitative easing, which is really not very big, but a lot of noise was made about it. And here we are 5 years later, still with pretty high unemployment, still struggling to get our economy rolling again.
But looking a lot better than Europe.
And then the third experiment was done, the third aspect of this experiment was done in China.
Even further to
the
east.
Where they really, east? No, it's west of here.
It's west of here, but east of here as well.
No,
it depends on how far you want
to
go.
If you go, the closest place to China is the west coast. Therefore, if you have to go west from California to get to China.
That's just the fastest way to get there.
It's west of the United States.
But it's in the Eastern Hemisphere.
I don't give a hoot.
We're in the Western Hemisphere.
As far as I'm concerned.
Eastern Hemisphere.
When I think about China, it's west of here.
Right.
So,
okay.
It's west.
It's lines on a map again.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, like if you actually talk to people, I'm a little off the subject here, but you may have even told me this initially. I don't know, but. One of the things that is socially unacceptable to say through much of the world today, particularly to the people who live there, is calling, for instance, China the Far East.
Right.
Calling
yes, absolutely.
The Middle East, the Near East.
Or the Orient.
It is Asia. It is Southwest Asia.
Correct.
It is East Asia. It is West Asia. Anyway, but it's west of here, so we'll just leave it there.
Yes.
And the point is that China pulled all the stops out. They dumped money. Not at the monetary level like the Federal Reserve does, but at the fiscal level, the governmental level, they dumped money wholesale into the economy.
If you look at the percentages of GDP being used as stimulus.
Right, it was huge.
Massive.
And here's the interesting thing. Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis just released a paper where they studied all three systems and concluded the reason the Chinese are pretty much fully recovered in their economy now, with their everything, despite the fact their exports dropped, it's an export-driven economy, and their exports dropped by over 50%, should have put them into a severe recession or even a depression by what's called neoclassical economic theory. That's a mouthful.
Right.
It didn't. Now, admittedly, they build entire cities in the middle of nowhere.
Big empty cities now.
With nobody in them, and we think that's silly. But the point is, their economy is pretty much back up to full operational capacity at this point. When I say operational, not full capacity, but it's well up there. Their revenues are flowing. Their coffers are filling.
They did something amazing in that they have converted more to a consumer economy, which
right.
we've been asking them to do for many years.
But they said basically the experiment said that in an economic downturn, the smart thing to do, and this is the Federal Reserve of St. Louis, Missouri, United States, not some international organization and certainly not China saying this, that their methodology worked better, and this, get this, was less expensive than was ours and was several light years ahead of Europe's. In other words, they said the same, they basically repeated, by the way, what Ben Bernanke said in his farewell speech, which he said monetarily the Federal Reserve was trying to bail out the sinking boat while fiscally Congress was punching holes in the bottom.
Right.
That's a paraphrase.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here, because a lot of conservative people hear what we've just said and said, oh, that's Keynesian economics. That's the Democrats talking. If there's a big red button that had a buzzer on it, I would hit that
now. No, I think it's a billion.
A billion?
A billion.
Not Keynesian?
No, Cain and Abel were on the opposite sides of things.
Yeah. But a billion. Yes,
yeah,
Abel.
Yeah. Abel.
Over in Japan, yeah, is that what you're talking about?
I don't know, but it worked out. It was just, yeah.
What I'm saying, though, is that Milton Friedman said something very similar to this. Milton Friedman, the champion of the conservative cause, the laissez-faire, the don't let the government get involved in things,
you're
said,
calling Milton Friedman lazy?
No, something like that.
Boy,
he said,
fighting words.
In downturns, of big economic downturns, the government should step in. It should have a balanced budget in good years, and it should spend lots more than it makes in down years to let the economy recover and then work on cutting the budget. And this is
actually,
Milton Friedman, who is the guy that people see as...
Actually, he said run a surplus.
Run a surplus during the other years, yeah.
Which, of course...
We don't like that.
And I hate to say this, I'm not trying to be political here, but when the Republicans took over the government in 2000, they promptly
got rid of the surplus.
To get rid of the surplus and run a deficit again.
Yeah, the idea here is what Texas does. So those of you that think of that the government needs to cut budgets and not hold on to, Texas has a rainy day fund that we don't touch. Unless there's an emergency.
Only on rainy days.
Only when it rains,
right.
Which doesn't happen very often in Texas.
Yeah, right.
Right.
At least while the legislature's in session, because they're in session in the summertime.
The idea here is to have a balanced budget, to run a surplus, so that you can spend that rainy day, that surplus money, in downturns to keep your economy running. And that's what we've done in Texas. It's what the Chinese did. The Chinese and the Texans did exactly the same thing in the recession. The federal government was right in the middle, punching holes in our boat, in the Texan boat, while we were trying to do fiscally the right thing here in Texas. You've got a look on your face. Like,
yeah, if you actually take a look nationwide, Texas is number two or number three as a recipient of federal dollars.
That's true.
And we couldn't...
It's true.
We literally... The state of Texas literally would have no hope of balancing its budget.
Absolutely true.
If it didn't have phenomenal quantities of federal dollars flowing into the state.
Well, that's because it doesn't have the tax revenue of a country. It has the tax revenue of a state. If you applied the same constitutional values that Texas has on a country level, you have something that looks amazingly like what the Chinese are doing.
Right.
In that they are running surpluses. They're taking that money and they're holding it in reserve.
Right.
We call it a sovereign fund, and they're holding that money in reserve for downturns in the economy where they turn and they pump it back in. In Texas, we use that money, and we don't have enough tax revenue to do what Chinese have done, but it's basically the same thing. We haven't done it as efficiently as the Chinese, but we want to, and it's funny because the Chinese are technically a communist regime, but they have a balanced budget with a surplus running every year.
This is interesting. China's government is technically communist.
Okay? It does everything capitalistically.
And the fundamental belief of communism, the most fundamental aspect of Marxism, is from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. Now, this is what's fascinating. The leader of the capitalist countries in the world, the most capitalist major country in the world, is the United States.
Yep.
China does not have Social Security or Medicare.
Right. So who's more communist? This is really weird.
That is really fascinating. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, McClure's. How are you today?
Good. I don't know. I think we're here.
I think so.
I know you've been here for the last 4 hours.
No, well, it just depends on which flight you're on.
It yeah. seemed like it was 4 hours.
You've right. been on
well,
a flight.
Obviously, right.
But I digress. This is Bill in Temple. It just, you know, you were commenting about Texas being the number two or number three recipient of taxes from the federal government.
Right, per capita, I'm talking about.
Where does the federal government get its taxes from?
That's exactly what we were saying. It comes from...
It comes from everywhere, but there's a lot of states...
A lot of it comes from Texas, and
correct.
So we're really only
right.
getting our money back.
Well,
which is what I was saying about tax revenue.
Particularly here in Bell County, there's something that I think people are not aware of that I want to keep emphasizing. If you look at the net dollar flows in the United States to and from the federal government, the highest, outside of the District of Columbia, the highest net inflows from federal expenditures, in other words, federal money being given for doing nothing to a county in the United States is Bell County.
And when you say for doing nothing,
right.
what do you...
If the federal government pays somebody to build a road, they've done something, the federal government paid them for it, okay?
Yeah.
If a person is retired, what is the federal government paying them to do? Nothing. If the federal government is putting a lot of money into the school system here, which they are, which...
It's called impact aid, which
right.
is because the military base, which is here, and I was just waiting for you to say that it does nothing.
No. There's two levels of impact aid. One of them is to pay the equivalent of property taxes for all of the people that actually live on Fort Hood but whose
right.
children attend our schools. Very,
right.
very rational. The
right.
second level of impact aid is a little bit squirrely because they also pay the school for people who are living in houses in the civilian economy who are paying their property taxes, but they also pay the schools for them, too. That's another level of impact aid that was stuck in there late in the game and results in, for instance, the Killeen Independent School District being one of the better-funded school districts in the world. But what I'm saying, though, is when the United States government buys something, it pays for it, it gets it, but when it pays for... Again, the second level of impact aid, the first level of impact aid makes perfectly good sense since schools are paid for out of property taxes. To offset the property taxes that are not being paid to educate the children from people who live on Fort Hood, very, very rational, and that was the original form of impact aid.
Well, and I've got some actual numbers
so when you,
here.
Okay, so, but when you start adding on the fact that We what I'm trying to tell you is the United States government is cutting its budget. And when the budget is cut, the biggest recipient is probably going to feel it the most.
Wait, we in Texas, and this is to recognize old Baldy's point. We in Texas in 2012 gave the federal government in income tax revenue $219 billion.
Good number.
Okay, it's a good number. We received from the federal government $277 billion.
Yes.
So about $58 billion more than we paid in.
Yeah, and so there's other states that could honestly look at the federal government and said, whoa, wait a minute.
California, on the other hand, paid in $33 billion more than they received.
Right. So basically there's which we in Texas love.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. Basically, Californians are giving us money.
But again, look at the number of military bases in the state of Texas.
Look at the number of military bases in the state of California.
You know, I don't think it's as many as in Texas. They've they've got Air Force, they've got,
there's a lot of
naval.
There's a lot of military posts in California. Let me tell you, the number of major naval installations in Texas is pretty small.
I think it's all kind of a moot point anyway. what we were trying to talk about is the concept of when is spending appropriate
and my,
by a governmental organization.
Yeah, my point is not morality. My point is that because Texas for many years had a dominance in Congress, and we had the Speaker of the House and the President, and you know you have to go back a ways, but Texas, the Texas Mafia, they called it, in Washington. Sam Rayburn was the Speaker of the House, and Lyndon Johnson was the majority leader in the Senate for many, many years. Went on to be president. That's, by the way, why, as I mentioned, we have NASA's Manned Spacecraft Center in Texas, but we launch people from Florida. That doesn't make a lot of sense, but it did because of who we had in Congress. We built a lot of lakes here. We did a lot of things here in Texas, and we are reaping the benefits of those things today. Fort Hood is here largely because we had a very effective congressional delegation when the Democrats ruled the world. What I'm warning people in Texas about, and particularly in Bell County, when we look at this, is not whether it's moral or immoral or right or wrong. It's just that if the same people who are screaming at the federal government, cut your spending in Texas, are the net recipients of about $60 or $70 billion a year more than they're paying to the federal government.
Now, that includes Social Security and Medicare,
right,
and everything else. That's basically all being combined. And to give you the worst state in the list, just so that we can all rest easy that we're not taking too much more than we're paying in.
It's Connecticut or something?
No, it's Florida. Florida pays in all of its tax revenues. This is estate taxes and corporate income tax and income tax on individuals. They pay in about $122 billion in 2012. They receive about $528 billion. That's $406 billion more than they put in. It's all the retirees in Florida.
Is this the same Marco Rubio that... from Florida, who's saying the federal government needs to cut spending?
This is the same.
And
what we're saying here is that federal and state politics are absolutely different from each other. They're different, and the way we have managed our budget in Texas is very clear.
And it's just, the only thing I'm trying to say is, folks in Bell County, don't be so radically interested in having the federal government cut spending. And by the way, they are cutting spending. And the Secretary of Defense has stated he's going to cut 100,000 Army soldiers. Where and on the advertisements for this radio station, have you noticed when it identifies itself as serving the largest military installation in the free world? If the cuts in Army soldiers are spread proportionally according in the largest bases get the largest cuts, what do you think it's going to mean to Bell County?
Well, it's the thing we've said all along.
Once you
decrease from a wartime footing, the number of soldiers are going to cut back. It's going to cut back. There's no question. Now the argument is not whether it's at Fort Hood or where it's located. It's, are we cutting the military beyond the point where it's safe for our country?
Well,
that's the discussion, and it's not a Bell County issue.
No.
Yes, it's going to face Bell County, but it's a national discussion.
Now, did you hear my discussion about that last week? That when that announcement was made?
I did not last week.
You know, in the budget agreement that we're under now, in order to get us towards a balanced budget, one of the big cuts was to reduce the cost of living increases for retirees from the military under age 62. In other words, while they're still of working age, they would be like the Texas teachers are and not get inflation increases. And that was beat down by the veterans groups, a lot of them out of this local area.
Yep. There's a lot of special interests that are going to
was really beat down.
And politically, that is
and it got killed. And and very shortly thereafter, the Secretary of Defense says we got to cut 100,000 troops. That is not a coincidence. Those are linked.
I'll let you go. I know you're getting to the end of the show. I wanted to say great discussion at the beginning about Russia and its economic dependency on oil in Europe. That was a great discussion.
All right.
I appreciated that
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
You guys take care. Thanks a lot.
You too.
And we got to play some comicals. I mean commercials.
Real quick, just because I said that about Texas taking more money than it was paying in. If you go back to the nasty years of 2007 and 2008, we paid a lot more in federal income taxes and revenue to the country than we received from by a ratio of 0.4. We paid in a lot more than we received. Right. So it's kind of nice to have it paid back to us.
We're getting payback. Okay. And now we want them to cut spending.
You're right.
Okay. We'll be back for a few minutes after these commercials. And we're back with a little more of the Personal Wealth Coach. We're about out of time for this Saturday, March 15th, 2014. And we have talked about Much Ado About Nothing, the beginning of World War II 1A. World War I 1A? World War 1A?
A2, AB.
21-1. Yes, anyway. And we hope it isn't starting. And we're hoping that people are smart enough to have read their history. Unfortunately, not a lot of that happens.
If you'd like to contact us off the air, you can reach us by voicemail at 947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You may email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com.
And until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.